Trump made the decision to go to war. Well, I'm not sure he did. I think the Israelis made the decision, and Trump was compelled to follow along with it. I think Mr. Netanyahu continues to exert far more influence and power and authority, frankly, in Washington, D.C. than Donald Trump. And that's why people are saying to me all the time, well, why haven't the Democrats stood up and insisted on an end to this? Why aren't they fighting this? And I said, because the same people that control the Republican Party control the Democratic Party. There is a profound difference there. They may differ on some other domestic issues, but when it comes to Israel and Iran, everybody's pretty much in the same boat.
Welcome to today's interview here on brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams, and I'm joined today by one of my favorite guests, and I think just a great all-around American, Colonel Douglas McGregor joins us today. Welcome, Colonel. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Well, thanks for the nice introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, I try to keep it short because you don't need an introduction. Everybody sees you. They you know, you're well known now, and you have been calling this situation correctly for, you know, even during the Ukraine-Russia conflict and now with what's happening in the Middle East. If only our leaders had the wisdom to listen to you, maybe we wouldn't be in this quagmire. What's your current overall assessment of where we are?
Well, I think at the moment, not a great deal has changed, unfortunately, in Ukraine. As far as the American side is concerned, we continue to waste dollars and time and resources on this criminal regime in Kiev that's just wallowing in corruption. And of course, you have the periodic conflict on the ground in eastern Ukraine, but I think the Russians at this point are getting ready to do something more dramatic than they have recently. I think they'll probably move more of their forces closer to the Dnieper River. But I still think the Russians, sadly, believe that at some point they're going to have an arrangement with the West, and specifically with the people in NATO and the EU, that will bring the war to a close. I don't think it will, but there are still Russians that believe that. Now, as far as what's happening in Iran, we just went through this massive air and missile campaign, which never had much chance of success against a country that is half the size of India with 93 million people, surrounded largely by enormous mountain ranges and impassable deserts. But we did it nonetheless. And then we decided to add insult to injury when we said we wanted a ceasefire. The Iranians were not particularly interested in a ceasefire, but we said we wanted it. So the Iranians said, fine. And then we instituted suddenly this blockade. I don't think we were ready to blockade, you know, Iran and the Persian Gulf, but that's what we've done. I don't think we have enough forces to get it, to make it effective. And we're so far away because of fear of being sunk at sea that the ships are limited in what they can cover. So if you're going to sit 400 or 500 miles south of the Persian Gulf and you've only got, let's say, 25 ships for almost 800 miles, you're in quite a bind to try and control everything coming in and going out. Now, for the moment, it looks like nothing really is coming in or going out, but that has more to do with the Iranians who are upset over the blockade. I think the larger picture, though, that everybody needs to understand is that the world is sliding towards a major depression. There's no understanding of just what this stoppage of the Persian Gulf has made in terms of impact on the rest of the world. Everything, nitrogen, phosphorus, aluminum, helium, all of your fertilizer, in addition to liquefied natural gas or any of the other petroleum products, makes it impossible for the world to continue with normal daily life. And so now you have the threat of famine that is growing with each passing day because the fertilizer is sitting aboard ships inside the Persian Gulf. And that fertilizer is critical in places like India, Southeast Asia, Korea, Japan. And in addition to that, of course, you have the minerals and metals that I mentioned. These things are absolutely vital if you're going to have computer chips and microcircuitry. You know that from your own experience. So if you don't have these things and the rest of the world is coming to a virtual stop, that means the rest of the world is staring at a depression. We here in the United States are very definitely looking at a recession, because when you have a rise in energy prices, you also have a drop in the availability of credit. Cheap credit is inextricably intertwined with cheap energy. Energy becomes more expensive, credit dries up. So some of your major financial firms, private equity firms like BlackRock and KKR and others are in very serious trouble. They're in such trouble, they're just illiquid. And they're trying to borrow money against the assets that they have under management because they have no cash and they can't pay anything out, which is why they've told their customers and the people that have invested with them, don't bother dropping by. We can't give you any money. That's
Colonel, a very bad sign. I want to add something to your, I think, correct assessment of the economic implications of this. I did a lot of research on this very point. I'm going to show an infographic that I created on my screen here. The coming famine, the engineered starvation of 2027. Yep. And if you actually look at the research and which countries are most vulnerable, here we are. Sudan, Yemen, Somalia, Ethiopia, and Bangladesh are all the top tier high risk nations with literally tens of millions of people that are already marginally on a starvation projection. If not for food aid, they would starve this year. Mm-hmm. But without the nitrogen that you just mentioned, without the energy, and by the way, Bangladesh, for example, has its own nitrogen production plant, but it needs natural gas, you know, out of Qatar. That's not coming either. So just in these nations, these are the highest risk nations. And as you well know, you've talked about this. After that, then there's Egypt and then there's India that are also going to suffer tremendously. We may not starve to death in America, but our people will end up paying much higher prices for food, which will have economic consequences. So can you talk more about the, you know, Trump's decision to start this war could literally kill more people than the Holocaust?
Oh, easily. There's no question about it. And you're right to make the point that you put the worst cases up there, which are people that are always living on the margins as it is. But we need to understand that until the 1970s, we never stockpiled oil. It was the oil crisis of the 1970s that resulted in the creation of all these strategic reserves all over the world. And the people with the best strategic reserves, the most in reserve that can survive this better than anybody, are the Chinese. You know, now we're going to have our problems. People don't realize how much oil we import to California. And California has a limited number of refineries. And I've forgotten the exact number of how many barrels of oil per day they need to sustain themselves. But that's falling rapidly. Now, people say, well, we've got oil. Yes, but it's not on the West Coast, which means it has to be trucked over the mountains to California. We don't have any pipelines that go from east to west. California is a basket case. Not only is it deeply in debt, but now it doesn't have the fuel that it needs to power what's left of its economy, which is not very good. So we're going to definitely have problems here at home. But I think the biggest issue of all for your purposes, and you're spot on this, is really fertilizer. And if you look at the fertilizer today, the amount that's being exported is a fraction of what's required for people all over the world. I'm talking about fertilizer coming out of the Gulf.
Right.
Now, you hit on something that's very important. Trump made the decision to go to war. Well, I'm not sure he did. I think the Israelis made the decision and Trump was compelled to follow along with it. I think Mr. Netanyahu continues to exert far more influence and power and authority, frankly, in Washington, D.C. than Donald Trump. And that's why people are saying to me all the time, well, why haven't the Democrats stood up and insisted on an end to this? Why aren't they fighting this? And I said, because the same people that control the Republican Party control the Democratic Party. There isn't a profound difference there. They may differ on some other domestic issues, but when it comes to Israel and Iran, everybody's pretty much in the same boat. Uh-huh. Now, we're going to have a vote, I think, coming up either tomorrow or the next day on the War Powers Act. I'll be very interested to watch that because I think we can expect all the Republicans to line up in support of the president's desire to continue this war no matter what. I'll be surprised if any Democrats don't also join. I think they may, but I don't think it has any chance of passing. So why did we go to war? Well, first of all, this is all about Israel. Contrary to what Donald Trump says publicly and his supporters, we don't have any reason to go to war with Iran. Iran presents no existential threat to us. And this argument that, well, look what they did to us when we were in Iraq. Well, what the Iranians did was that they provided some technology for improvised explosive devices to their Shiite co-religionists inside southern Iraq. But the Arabs quickly took that over. They manufactured them and built them. The Iranians had very little impact there. But they did what we would do if we had a Russian or Chinese enemy occupying Mexico. If the Russians or Chinese were as dumb as we are and tried to occupy Mexico the way we occupied Iraq, well, then I'm sure that we would provide the Mexican resistance with whatever it needed. That I see is something that one does because it's in one's interest to do so more than anything else. It's just a natural strategic outcome of a unwanted and unnecessary military occupation. But we also forget that when Saddam Hussein waged war against Iran and killed over 800,000 Iranians in the process because he wanted to capture their oil fields, and that's where most of the war was waged, and with missiles, of course, between cities, we supplied Saddam Hussein with all the materials he needed. We supplied him with weapons and equipment. We sent advisors over there. When I was a young officer commanding a tank company in, this got to go way back now to what, 1982, 83 at Fort Carson, Colorado, there were people leaving Fort Carson while I was there as a captain and going over to advise the Iraqis on how to fight the Iranians. We forget that. 800 plus thousand dead Iranians because of a war we actively supported against them in Iraq. Then, of course, we turned around, went back to Iraq in 1990, and you know the rest of the story.
And the chemical weapons that we supplied. Oh,
absolutely. And we go to the Germans to support that. We push the Germans into that, as we frequently do push our NATO allies to do things. So you're spot on. And if I were an Iranian, obviously, under the circumstances, I wouldn't feel much sympathy for us. But the picture itself is a very grim one, largely because of the economic picture that you're well familiar with. And I think that's something most Americans don't understand. They won't understand any of this until it hits them.
Yes, yes. What I love about your take on this is not only are you a highly experienced and highly educated, you know, hands-on military man, a veteran, but also I would consider you an academic of military history as well. And I want to
actually, my background is entirely in international relations and comparative politics. History is something I studied on the side.
That's interesting.
If you don't know the historical record, what are you going to say about politics?
Yeah, yeah. But let me give out your Substack, though, here, before you continue, please. You write on Substack, and here it is, McGregorWarrior.substack.com. I just want to encourage people to follow you on Substack because you have some really outstanding articles. So I'm sorry to interrupt you there. Go ahead.
No, my only point is that, unfortunately, we tend to compartmentalize a lot, and people that go into what they call political science frequently have a superficial grasp of historical experience, and they may or may not understand much about basic economics.
Right.
And that's the problem. So they build these models that are there to try and tell you what's going to happen. They don't work. You know, most models are useless. Some are useful, but most of them are not. And it's a big problem in our educational approach. But anyhow, that's another subject.
Well, that actually is a great segue to what I wanted to ask you about next, which is the long-term damage to the oil output or oil throughput capacity of these wells in Iran and also neighboring countries. And of course, big news just broke today or yesterday. The UAE is leaving OPEC. They're going to set their own, you know, production at this point. But let me show you this infographic. It's another one I put together. Very few Americans actually know this, or very few people, that if the oil wells stop functioning, especially these low pressure wells that are in Iran, where the oil is barely flowing. If they stop and there's not flow for 2 or 3 weeks, or it could be as little as a few days or as long as a few months, then you can get 20 to 30% permanent loss of output of that well for a number of reasons. Water intrudes in the fissures. There can be paraffin blockages, all kinds of, you know, the chemical engineers can figure that out. But the bottom line that you cover, that you know, is that the economic consequences of this are now starting to add up day by day where you can't turn it right back on. So talk to us about what that means for our world.
Well, in the short run, if we don't stop this air campaign right now, this air and missile campaign, if we don't disengage from what we're doing, and I say this in all sincerity, and I would do it if I were the president of the United States, I would say on humanitarian grounds, I am disengaging our forces from this war, because this is no longer a question of a dispute between ourselves, Israel, and Iran. This is a dispute that's having global impact, and I'm not interested in being responsible for what you described earlier. But the startup cost in the future, if we don't stop this, I think it'll be 5 to 10 years before most of these oil fields really recover from the damage that's being done to them. It's not just oil infrastructure, as you point out. You have a problem that we, by the way, have right now in Venezuela. And that's one of the reasons all the oil corporation CEOs have met with Donald Trump, simply told him repeatedly, and didn't like it, didn't want to hear it. But they said, look, this is too expensive to go down there. The infrastructure's old. It would cost us hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, to go down there, refurbish everything, and pump out oil, even from existing oil wells, for all the reasons that you've already cited. So you're talking, you know, he talks about bombing everybody back to the Stone Age. I think we're not going to go back to the Stone Age, but we're certainly looking at a profound drop in our standard of living here in the United States and around the world. And that's going to last for several years. Every economist that I know has told me that repeatedly. If we don't stop this now, we continue this, and we do another 3 or 4 week air and missile campaign on the same scale that we did the last one, we're going to see damage that just won't be recovered for almost a decade in most cases.
It's like we're getting to the point where each day that ticks by right now can now have a price tag attached to it, a cost to the global economy and a cost to human lives. And it might be something like, I'm just guessing, but for each day that this war continues, another 50,000 people will starve in a year, or, you know, something like that. Maybe the number is smaller than that, but there's also an economic cost to this. For every day that ticks by, there's, you know, $200 million of losses to the global economy. So this is becoming, you know, Trump is sort of exporting the cost to the rest of the world while the American people are funding the weapons and Netanyahu is giving him his orders. It's like everybody loses.
Well, it's, you know, I'm just looking right now at a chart that unfortunately, you know, it's not available for you. But the bottom line is it's starting in April. The export of urea-laden ships out of the Gulf, in other words, urea, has gone from, you know, 1 million tons down to zero.
Oh, wow.
To zero right now. And that means, you know, everybody who's trying to cultivate crops, the planting season is upon us. And it takes weeks and weeks for these ships to arrive. I mean, it's not just, you're not just disrupting the supply train for this whole thing, the supply chain rather. You're doing exactly what you just said. You're making famine absolutely unavoidable. Now, I don't know if President Trump understands that, if this has been briefed to him. I don't know his attitude. The problem is that the Israelis want the destruction of Iran. That is their goal. This business, you said, well, how did we get into this? Well, it started out, well, we'll begin a campaign in support of the unrest, the supposed theory of millions of people who want to overthrow the evil regime. Well, that was always nonsense, and that failed quickly. Well, now what we have to do is decapitate, go in and destroy the regime. That didn't work. Well, now we have to cause the disintegration of the Iranian state and society. That's not going to happen. You know, we had 180 ships at sea during the Cuban missile blockade. That doesn't include all the submarines, but that included about 8 carriers, half of which were submarine chasers. Now, you stop and look at that. Remember that we were operating on our home waters, which meant that logistical support was easy. It was easy to reach a port. You could replenish quickly. You could pull ships off the line, send them back into port, bring them back, rotate them, whatever, rotate crews. We can't do that in the Indian Ocean. We have people that have been at sea for 10 months or more.
Wow.
Morale in the ships at sea is not good. They're miserable. Let's be frank. This is terrible duty. Anybody who's been to sea for any length of time knows it's tough. Well, this is worse. So there are a lot of people that are unhappy about that. Now, the other thing we're not talking about is the arsenal of missiles that we have at our disposal. And you can read different kinds of accounts. And I don't like to go into numbers because I don't know when it becomes classified. We know we launched over 1,000 Tomahawks. Tomahawk missiles were actually not bad off in that particular area. In other words, we've got another 1,000 that we can expend and we still have something left over. But when you move out of that into the Standard missile, into Patriot missiles, into theater high altitude missiles and so forth, we're scraping the bottom. And everybody misses the point that we are not mobilized for total war, which means that you're only producing a couple of hundred missiles or so every month, when in order to keep up with the demand, you need to do hundreds and hundreds of missiles every month, preferably 200 or 300 every week. The Chinese can produce 1,000 engines for missiles and rockets every day. So just stop and think about it. 1,000 rocket or missile motors every day. How many can we produce in a day? I think it's not going to be very many. And I doubt seriously we can get 30 out in a month.
Yeah, it's like single digits per day, maybe. Colonel,
exactly.
Stand by. We need to wrap up. This is part one of our interview. And I know you're going to stay with us for another part. We're going to talk about the future for the American empire and your involvement in the national conversation in part two coming up. So folks, if you haven't yet seen part two, you can find that at brightvideos.com, of course, free to watch. And thank you for watching today here. We've been talking with Colonel Douglas McGregor, a true American, just an all-around amazing person, I think, whose voice has a special importance at this time in history. So thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, and part two will also be posted. Take care. On this year's Mother's Day, celebrate mom, and we've helped you do that with some amazing specials and some gifts and some really interesting new products, all available from healthrangerstore.com/Mother's Day. So just type that into your browser URL, healthrangerstore.com/Mother's Day. It will take you to this page right here. It begins April 30th at 11 a.m. and runs through May the 4th at 11 a.m. And here's what you can do. First of all, when you purchase $129 or more, you're going to get this free gift of our 5G defense. This is a really potent, amazing product, high density. You want to stock up on that because of how it helps your body naturally respond to peroxynitrite production. You can do some research on that. And if you spend $199 or more, then you also get this organic pumpkin spice oat latte, which is, that's a fan favorite. This is really amazing. It's kind of like, people think of it as almost like a clean organic eggnog type of mix, but of course, with everything real, everything high density nutrition, certified organic and laboratory tested. In addition to that, we have several products back in stock. We've got our tart cherry probiotics, our brown flax seed, and our ginger immune support. These are stick packs that can be mixed with water or other beverages to make delicious drinks. And then we've got doorbusters, just limited quantities of these that are available. We've got our, for example, our hydrate elementals with organic coconut water and Aquamen. That's very popular, especially if you're active, you know, for athletes or anybody working out. Organic lucuma powder, our organic butter powder that has also been recently tested for dioxins, in addition to the other things we test. We've got our, oh, very delicious creamy tomato instant soup. People love that. And plus other products here, freeze-dried mangoes like candy. Everybody loves that. We've got the clean chlorella powder, an extra 40% off right now. These are pretty amazing prices. And then we have a new line of our essential oil blends called Vital Guard. And I'm going to talk about these separately, but it's amazing. The spray, if you spray it on your pillow before you go to sleep at night, you're going to feel like you're in a luxury resort. You know, the blend of oils here is historical. It's even, you know, biblical oils that are known and have a reputation of offering protective properties. It's really amazing. It's called Vital Guard. That's brand new from our store. You're going to love those blends. I love them myself. Then we have exclusive offers from our third-party vendors, including water filter companies. We've got the seed kits here that are very popular right now from ARC. Good time to start planting food in the Northern Hemisphere, and you know, because of what's happening with fertilizer, etc. We've got our Elk Antler Velvet Gold from the Daniel Vitalis, his company. The saunas, you know, so much more. Check all these products out. Again, just go to healthrangerstore.com/Mother's Day to see all of these third-party vendor products. Here's the Triad Air, and there's the Big Berkey Stainless Steel, the Terra Quant Portable Cold Laser, etc. And then on top of that, we've got some, depending on the day, we've got some special collections that are hand-selected for you. The first day being beauty and self-care and glow essentials right here. A lot of those available, including our collagen. And here's the Colloidal Silver Mouthwash. I use this every morning. It's really wonderful. Tooth salt and so on. There's so much more. I can't go through it all. I'm only halfway down the page. So we have a lot of specials, some free gifts, and then some offers from our third-party vendors that will really save you a bundle. So check it all out at healthrangerstore.com/Mother's Day. And remember that it begins April 30th at 11 a.m. and it goes through May 4th at 11 a.m. So happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. And I hope that you take advantage of this, given the way prices are going right now with supply chains and, you know, the fertilizer shortage and the energy shortage. Prices will never have these this low again, probably on any of these products. That's our world, folks. That's our world. So thank you for supporting us, and happy Mother's Day. And we hope you enjoy these ultra clean, lab tested, beneficial products. Thanks for your support. Happy Mother's Day. Take care.